foggy outside. All the planes have been grounded. Ain't the fire inside? Let's all go stand around it.
Funny, I've been there, and you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sandman Podcast. I am your host, Brian W. Tosh. As always, I am joined by our resident hack checker, Oliver Fullington.
Yep.
Our producer and co-host, El Hilo Del Hack, Tyler Fullington, and the man whose story's got stories, the hardcore icon, the Sandman. Hack, how the hell's it going?
Honestly, I'm psyched, and the biggest thing I'm psyched about wrestling right now is Swerve having the belt. I know we'll get to it, but that is some great business right there.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I was really happy to see Swerve getting the title. That was such a great finish to the pay-per-view on Sunday. We'll get to that in a little bit. I did want to touch on first here. We got a lot going on Philadelphia sports-wise. This is a huge night for us. It is Game 3. We are recording here on Thursday. What the heck happened in that Game 2?
A lot, apparently, according to the last two-minute report from the NBA. Apparently a lot that they didn't really call. But, I mean, it is what it is, and the Sixers didn't really play it great. Lowry could have called a timeout. A couple other players could have called a timeout. It's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it was a horrible, horrible loss. You needed to get that win. That was just awful.
I still think we're going to win the series. I think we're very capable of still winning the series, even though they say it's 92% chance or something ridiculous. I heard on the radio that we're not going to win the series. But even after we lost game one, we were still favored in the series, and that doesn't happen very often. You know what I mean? I could see it if it was a Miami situation, and then. And you're favored, but you lose your best guy, something like that. But that didn't happen with us, and we could never really figure out why the line was that, and then why the Sixers could be down one and still favored by +350 for the series.
Yeah.
So Ty came up with a great little stat for lines today. What was it?
So the Knicks in Game Two were favored by 5, and then now coming to Philadelphia, the Sixers are favored by 5. That's a 10-point swing in line changes. And that I heard on the radio today, this isn't just coming from me, like somebody in the know that says that doesn't happen. A 10-point swing from home team to home team.
In the playoffs.
Right.
Should be a 2.5, a 1, yeah, or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Sixers lose that game, and it should probably, I don't know.
And the way we lost it, because we really had the game won. We lost it in the last 18 seconds.
And I think that's what the odd makers are doing. They're like, listen, yeah, the Sixers had that in hand. If it wasn't for that, then...
I take full accountability for the loss. I turned to my roommate with 30 seconds left and said, I can't believe the Sixers are going to win this game. And then they didn't. So,
well, God.
Oh, yeah. We're sitting with the jinx.
Yeah. We also have the NFL draft tonight. I know I'm super hyped about the draft myself, so... anybody, you guys have the Eagles targeting? I mean, you want them to go after a corner, or
I want them to go after a corner. I know it won't happen, but I want us to go and take a top corner off the board.
Me, I don't want a corner at all. I want the lineman that Jason Kelsey thinks that we should draft. I have no problem taking that guy in the first round. If we're so set on our offense being that great, then there's no reason that we can't spend our first pick on an offensive lineman. I know it's not sexy, but they showed a graph on the Pat McAfee show the other day, and people that got drafted in the first round, between centers, guards, and tackles, they were the most likely people out of any other draft position that you make in the first round to make it to their second contract with your team.
Yeah.
Those guys are just lock them in. When they're that great, it's like plug them there and then they're going to play there.
Dude, and the center was like 92%. I mean, it's probably a little skewed because centers don't really get drafted in the first round, but if you're a center getting drafted in the first round, you're probably pretty freaking good.
Well, the stats were 2000 to 2019 every first round draft pick.
Yeah, I saw the same stat. I think it's a little skewed because second contract sometimes.
Hey, dude, if you're a wide receiver and you do great on your first deal, somebody's snagging you.
Right.
You know, so that makes sense. They're not doing the same deal with the same team.
Like A.J. Brown, for example, would fall into somebody who didn't get a second contract with his team.
Because he was great.
Because he was traded. That was the only reason.
Right. The only reason I take validity in the statistic is because it's 20 years of data. So obviously it's got to have some merit.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we take a lineman that can play multiple positions and maybe start right away, I don't want somebody who's going to have to sit on the bench and waste a first-round pick on that.
I'll give you three real quick, if you're not shocked. Jared Verse, edge rusher, Florida State. Byron Murphy, defensive tackle, out of Texas. And deep sleeper, Brock Bowers, tight end from Georgia.
We've drafted Bowers. A couple defensive linemen. Is that guy an outside rusher?
He's the guy
from Florida State?
He's a defensive tackle pass rusher. He has the most pass rushes on the inside in a while. So I know the Eagles went D-tackle last 2 years in the first round. But
well, we got Fletcher getting old. Moved. We got Jalen and Jordan, who hopefully are going to make it past their sophomore year and be able to play in the second half.
Well, they actually have the tank to play a whole year.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I just can't guarantee that Jordan Davis is going to be a three-down defensive tackle in this league. So
no.
He's more committed than he was the first year. He dropped probably 20 pounds from his first camp to his second camp. You know, but those two, well, they played a lot of downs in the first five games of the season, you know, a lot of downs. Probably at like game six or seven that they were playing more downs than they have ever played in a season before.
Well, dude, they played like 100 and some downs in the Buffalo game, and that's when that was the end. Like, that was the downfall.
College guys don't have the tank for that, but I hope they I consider Mitchell the corner from Toledo. That's who I kind of target.
The only reason Toledo scares me, competition scares me a little.
Strength of competition.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Moving on here, we all watched Dynasty from AEW on Sunday. I thought it was just a tremendous pay-per-view top to bottom. Really great matchwork. I enjoyed the hell out of that show. Obviously, there's two things from that show that everybody in the wrestling world is talking about.
Will Ospreay's the best wrestler on the planet.
I don't think that's even a hot take, Ollie. I mean, Hack, what the heck did you think after watching that?
Wow. But I've seen plenty of matches at that level in All Japan, like tournaments.
Right.
So I can't put it on. For America, easily probably the best match in 10 years.
Okay.
Work-wise, you can't. You're just not going to match it work-wise ever. The only way you can match that is like a Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, when they're like, or Hogan and Savage when they're colliding like these two huge superstars, you know. But work rate, you can't touch that. Maybe Okada, Kenny Omega could do something like that, you know.
Yeah, I was just so blown away by that match. I don't know.
Much stuff I've never seen before either. Yeah. Some stuff I'm like, wow, what the heck? Well, I want to hear Joey Styles tell me what that move was.
Yeah, like I don't know. I'm weird when I watch wrestling. Like sometimes I'm like, I come up with spots before I watch the match. Like I envision in my head before. And I never saw the knee counter coming that Brian did late in that match. Like I never envisioned it. And the way he hit him with that knee was absolutely perfect timing. It was just incredible. The crowd was into it from the first moment.
And well, they should. Why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, why wouldn't they
be? Yeah, you're getting holy shit chants before they even touch or do anything as soon as the bell rings. I mean, that's what you want. That's what you live for as a performer.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
Do you think Ospreay is like kind of just setting a bar that's like unattainable for like himself even? Because like now it's like if you don't go out there and have the match of the year every single time,
But you don't have, once you have match of the year and you're established, you can always back down from that a little bit. It's professional wrestling. It's not professional real sports.
Yeah.
When you're there, everybody expects you to stay there. You know, he can always back up from there and then bring it in when he has to. You know, but there's not a lot of guys. Well, there's a couple guys in that company. Let's say there's seven people in that company that could have very close to that good of a match that Ospreay had with Danielson.
Yeah.
You know, there's other guys that could do that. But I'm not so sure that there will be smart business for them to show that. But who knows with that company.
But I want to give Danielson his flowers here for a second, because if you look at it,
he brought it in that match.
A lot of the better matches, better ranked matches for AEW is, you know, Danielson, Jay White, Danielson, Ricky Starks, Danielson, Hangman, Danielson, Omega, Danielson, MJF. I mean, yes, Ospreay's Ospreay. We're not, but the moments that Danielson, like, I don't know.
His timing's great. Everything's great about the guy. I just don't like his size.
Yeah, you hate. I know. He just can't get past his size.
No, any guy's size, like the same with the other guy that has the belt in WWE, Sami Zayn. Yeah. I can't get past their size.
Well,
it's like you said, dude, it's a new era of wrestling. It's not the big guy. I'm just saying, I just wanted to give Danielson his flowers because he works. Yeah, he can work any kind of match with anybody, be great.
And he's putting on a run in AEW now. That's like an all-time run.
Yeah,
like
100%.
What he's been on right now is just an incredible run.
Do you think, no matter how good that run is, does he wish he was part of what WWE's creating right now?
No, he chose his choice.
But when he chose his choice, Vince was still back in control, and it was a totally different world there. So, that business since Vince left is on the straight rocket ship to Mars.
I think he would be able to have more of these Bryan Danielson type matches in WWE if it was the.
But my point is he doesn't have to work as hard in AEW as he would in WWE.
Oh no, I think he's working way harder in AEW.
I know, that's my point.
Okay. You're saying in WWE he could preserve himself a little bit more.
Of course.
But I don't think he wants to.
I get that too.
He's straight up an artist. Like, he wants to put on the best wrestling he possibly can. Well, and that's part of the reason that he's doing so now with this AEW run. He wanted to go wrestle in Arena Mexico. He wanted to go wrestle in the Tokyo Dome. Those things just are not going to be possible while working in WWE.
Well, even still at this point in his career, he's going to Mexico?
Well, dude, he worked CMLL a couple weeks back. He wanted to wrestle.
They might have said he just came back from there and somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, he lost those years due to that neck injury where he was like itching to get back, and now he's on this run where, like, he wants to put on show. And he, knowing him with his Ring of Honor background and everything like that, like, that dude just wants to work. Like, he wants to wrestle the best people, he wants to put on the best matches, like, he loves the business, he just wants to work. I remember
what that used to feel like.
Tied to your point about Danielson being in the best AEW matches.
All right, tie check.
I actually saw a tweet over the weekend, the top 30 matches in AEW history, according to Cage Match, Bryan Danielson is in 8 of those top 30 matches.
And that leads, right?
Kenny Omega leads with 10.
Okay.
Then Hangman with 9. And the Bucks and Danielson are tied with 8.
And how many of them are working against each other, though, also?
The Elite combined 20 times, which is the Bucks and Kenny together. So.
Okay. I think the interesting call out with that, too, is that Bryan came in 2 years after the company was going. So he hasn't even been there.
Right, so he's got 8 in 2 less years compared to... Well, Omega was how long into it?
Omega was very shortly after they launched.
Okay.
Very shortly after.
How's
Okada not even in there at all?
Well, he's only had a couple matches.
I know, but still.
I mean,
Just on Red.
I mean, his match with Pac to open the show, God, I thought was awesome.
A great match. Yeah, I've awesome. Seen him in a couple great matches. Awesome. He just had one that was that Dynasty match was really good.
Yeah, with
that guy.
The long hair.
Yeah, that
dude.
Was yeah, really. Could have been. I mean, I never expect. It was hard to me to watch it and have my heart into it because I never expected Okada to lose whatsoever.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that takes away a little bit of my brain when I'm watching it. I'm like, well, I know Okada's not going to lose. Let me appreciate the art.
And I think I just want to put on for the record, I think Pac is one of the most underrated workers in the entire.
He bumped his ass off in that match. I mean, he does every match. He's phenomenal.
The company is full of guys like that.
Yeah.
That company has got 25 guys like that.
Oh, no, they are. They are absolutely stacked. That roster is absolutely incredible. And I thought they all killed it on that show. I thought that show was tremendous. And I was really happy to see. I know we've been talking about this for a couple weeks now, and longer even. I was so happy to see Swerve get that big win. Swerve is awesome. Getting that win is going to be huge for him. I didn't really like a lot of the presentation last night after the follow-up with that. I thought he should have had a promo on Dynamite.
Yeah, I don't think he should have been working a match.
I think he should have done a promo segment and come out and celebrate.
Yeah, lead
win.
The show, come out, right?
And instead he went to a match. But you know what? Swerve is something special, Hack. What do you think about Swerve's work right now? Like where...
All right, there's tons of guys in that company that have very close to that work rate. He's got the it factor.
Yeah.
He has the it, and that's what separates. There's so many guys his size, his weight, same body build, but he has the it.
Yeah.
There's something about him that's the it, and I don't, it's a Jordan it, it's a Tiger Woods it, it's a LeBron James it. He just has that it.
You see it when you see it.
Yeah, and now I'm a little bit, I have to backtrack a hair because you know how I hated his dude that's with him that stands behind him and
Prince
doing
Nana.
The dance.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of that match, when Swerve's on the top rope before that last stomp, and I'm getting goosebumps right now because I just watched it like an hour ago. He's standing on the top rope, and he's in no hurry whatsoever. He just lets the crowd build and build and build for like 5, 6, 7
seconds.
You just
gave me goosebumps talking about it.
Boom! Curb stomp. And then his whole body's on top of Joe. It's like Joe's like DeAndre the Giant laying there, and there's a midget. Am I allowed to say midget?
Yeah.
small person.
Yeah. And he looked like a small person pinning him. His whole body was on him. But then after the finish, and the crowd was so right there. It was great. Finish, and the whole place started doing that dude's dance. And yes. I'm like, God damn it.
We tried telling you the dance is over.
The whole place—it's like the march in the Public Enemy.
Yeah,
you know, and the whole building's doing it. I'm like, all right, he got me.
It was really awesome. I thought Joe did a great job in that match as well. Really, just being that, you know,
force. Yeah, and props to Joe for you know, taking that title and, you know, making it credible
after the MJF thing.
Absolutely.
Hold it until we figure out what we want to do.
Yeah.
And I think they waited for the right time. I know we talked about this last month when it was the three-way at the previous pay-per-view. You guys were kind of saying, like, now's the time for Swerve. I think waiting for the singles was the proper move for it, and I thought it was the right time.
I just didn't want them to fuck Swerve.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to... him to lose that three-way and then get pushed to the wayside and then them just say fuck it and then go, like, that's the only thing I was worried about. I didn't know if he was going to get that another one-on-one opportunity.
Yeah.
No. The match was paced great. It was a Joe pace. I mean, Swerve could work at anybody's pace on the planet probably, you know, but Joe can't.
Yeah, and following the Bryan and Ospreay match, I know the Bucks and FTR followed them, but for them to follow them in the main event, I mean, that is just, like, so hard to do, to follow that match, and they really did follow it well. So, like, everybody on that show.
It wasn't as much work as I expected in the main event,
But I think maybe Joe and them saw the Ospreay Danielson match and was like, "Dude, we
do the exact opposite.
Yeah, we ain't gotta do. We ain't gotta do what they gotta do. Slow it down. Less is more, and just make every little thing mean more. That's all you gotta do."
And it did,
right?
Yeah, it did,
and it just did. I love Joe's work.
Yeah,
I love his
work. And it's everything like you said with Swerve just standing up there at the top rope, just letting everybody feel it, like doing nothing. Yeah, the
place was on its feet, going nuts.
Yeah,
that's when you know you're doing great business. So, and they know it right there that that's our new champ, the first African American dude ever to be that, which I didn't even realize until I stayed with it and he cut a promo about it or something.
Yeah, so like, okay, so
with, or they said so.
With Swerve getting the belt now, you know, I always like the fantasy book. They do have Wembley in August. Are you going to go Ospreay Swerve in Wembley?
Well, you don't
you have to be careful with this.
Yeah,
because so the upcoming schedule for AEW pay-per-view wise is Double or Nothing, May 26th.
Where?
In Vegas.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay.
Forbidden Door, Long Island, New York, June 30th. All In, August 25th in London.
Yeah, that's the Wembley show.
All Out, September 1st. And then Wrestle Dream, October 12th, Tacoma, Washington, where Swerve is from.
Okay.
Well, I would think they would be absolutely stupid to put those two together on that card.
I agree.
In Wembley?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, either is Ospreay going to take the belt off of him in less than 2 months?
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, and you can't have Ospreay lose.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah,
so
you can't
what is Ospreay? Well, let's think about the book like this. What is Ospreay doing besides that?
Ospreay won the Battle Royal match last night to challenge for the international title.
I was just going to say Roderick Strong
in their next pay per view.
And Roderick Strong could work.
Oh boy,
he just had a great match on Dynasty.
Him and O'Reilly. Yeah, they had a great match.
Yeah. He's a Dean Malenko lookalike to me, that dude. But yeah, he could take that belt at Wembley, Ospreay. Right. That kind of makes sense to me, and that's maybe why it's situation the way it is at this point.
Yeah, and I think you don't want, you know, Joe, I wouldn't say was a transitional champion, but he kind of was. I don't think he went back-to-back transitional champions.
Absolutely not. But also, the same thing, we could look at WWE's booking between who they have with the straps now. Like, Becky's on, they're going to be in, in June, they're going to be in Ireland or
London.
Are you sure it's London? No,
it's Clash at the Castle.
Clash at the Castle.
Yeah
that's where the guy with the blade.
Scotland. That's so, McIntyre's area.
So, yeah, exactly. So McIntyre, Sammy there. Maybe McIntyre wins it back. And then you got the girl that just won it, the redhead, the man. She's from England, which is right there.
Ireland.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's why I knew she was winning the other night. I mean, she deserves it even if they weren't going to Scotland. You know what I'm saying?
I think to your point about Wrestle Dream being in Swerve's hometown, and that's in, when did you say Wrestle Dream?
October 12th.
I know Brian is looking to rap as a full-time wrestler.
I was just going to ask you, do you think...
I thought he was Brian Danielson?
Yes. Yeah.
I thought he was a guy that wanted to go wrestle everywhere on the planet.
No,
his final year, he was saying.
As a full-time wrestler.
As a full-time wrestler. He said he's never going to fully retire, but as a full-time wrestler, he's going to be done soon. So I was going to ask you, do you think they would do Swerve and Danielson for the title at Wrestle Dream?
Well, dude, do you think that injury shoot, first of all?
No, that's a work.
Total work.
Total work. When he protected him on that finish. If you go watch that finish again with you're talking about the Tiger Driver at the end.
Yes.
He slides down and takes it mostly on his back. He doesn't get dropped right on his head. So if you go back and watch that finish, I think at the only point in the match where he may have actually gotten hurt was the Hunikin Rana, the top rope Hunikin Rana that he flipped off of. Ospreay flipped off of and landed on his feet. I think on that one, Brian took a pretty nasty bump, but I don't think there was anything.
Yeah, he felt like on his head in the corner.
That, if anything, I think was the worst bump that he took in that match. I don't think on the Tiger Driver finish that he took it that bad.
The only reason I agree with you is because they kept the camera on him.
Yeah, that was total work.
If it's shoot injury, the camera doesn't know to keep panning to him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, like, that's how that works. But I just wanted to
No, I thought it was such a great show. I really did. You know, AEW, look, they charge you for the pay-per-view. You're not getting it on a streaming service for, you know, a $10 fee like Peacock on WWE Network. But they really make sure that when they put on pay-per-view events, like, you're getting your money's worth.
Yeah, well, they deliver.
Yeah, they deliver.
It was 4.5 hours or something.
Like it that. Was, man. I mean, it was a long show, but it's a great,
great
show.
Work. Like, listen, WWE's got the storytelling right now, but every pay-per-view AEW does, they knock out of the park with the work. Wow. Their storytelling is kind of, you know, whatever, but the work on their pay-per-views are top-notch.
Oh, you can't question it. Speaking of pay-per-views that really knocked the socks off, this is a great transition here. We are reviewing this week one of the most legendary pay-per-views in ECW history. This was your guys' first pay-per-view offering, Barely Legal, 1997. I got a couple questions regarding the show leading up to it, Hack. In 1997, I know that you guys had probably wanted to go to pay-per-view in 1996, but there was the infamous mass transit incident with New Jack. Do you remember anything about that kind of delaying your start on pay-per-view or...
No, not really.
Okay. I was reading some of the sheets, and everything I was hearing about it was saying that, you know, some of that was delaying the pay-per-view start that you were going to look to get on in early 96.
That sounds to me more like a Paul Heyman excuse than it was so hard to get on pay-per-view right then. You needed so much. You had to put up upfront money and stuff like that. That sounds like a Paul Heyman excuse.
Okay. In terms of the show leading up to it, I do have some notes from the Wrestling Observer. There was a couple guys who were like kind of on the fence about whether or not they were leaving. Rob Van Dam was top there. In the April 14th, 1997 Wrestling Observer, Rob Van Dam's leaving for WCW is pretty much expected by everyone, including the ECW fans who were chanting, "You sold out to him," on the house show on April 5th in Queens, New York. Do you remember anything at the time in the locker room about Rob with the rumors about him going to WCW?
People were coming and going then, you know what I'm saying? And I wasn't really a rumor guy. I didn't read the sheets. I didn't really care, you know, so... Okay. You think about how many people had been there and then left. You know, there was like a proven ground, and I knew it was a proven ground.
Yeah, so there was a lot of guys who had, you know, cups of coffee in ECW and weren't like the mainstays there. But this wasn't something that like reached your radar or anything like that.
No, but I didn't care then. Maybe some other guys might have known about it because a lot of people read those sheets.
Yeah,
you know, if you asked Todd Gordon that, he probably knew it exactly. But I didn't care.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because in The Observer, Meltzer mentions that there was a New York clique of Taz, Tommy Dreamer, the Dudleys, and the Eliminators likely aren't going anywhere. And you were also included. Sandman, while not a member of the New York clique and arguably the most popular wrestler in the company right now, is also not one that is doubtful going anywhere. So Meltzer didn't think you were going anywhere, and then a year later you were gone. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and first he was wrong with their New York clique.
Yeah?
Bubba did not like Taz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This isn't like a breaking news or anything, you know what I'm saying? That was not a clique.
Okay.
Taz was not in a clique with anybody.
Maybe he's just talking about location where the guys are from. I
don't know. Yeah, and the Eliminators were their own guys, too.
Well, there was Team Taz.
But that's those guys from his school: Chris Chetty, Danny Doring, Roadkill, and that other fake Taz that was there. That kid that did the fake Taz, I don't know his name, but there was a bunch of dudes that were part of that team that he made Team Taz. Bought them all jackets, everything.
Yeah. Okay, I got a
question. And his own belt.
I do also have this note here, so I got to read this as well. This is from the same week in the Observer. There was actually quite a bit more going on behind the scenes than in the ring over the weekend. Shane Douglas and Sandman nearly got into a fight with the heat stemming from last week. Let's just say that every version of the story I get from eyewitnesses differs from the other, but the basic consensus is that last week when Brian Lee and Pitbull 2 broke a table, Douglas, who was the promoter of the show backstage, said that they should be fired. The word got to Lee, and when Douglas found out, he was screaming about the stooge who told him and how the dressing room had stooges, and that's what's so bad about the WWF. Anyway, when it came out that the Sandman told him the two pretty much started to fight, and the guys broke them up. Douglas and Tracy Smothers also nearly got into a fight stemming from all that. This week in Scranton, PA on 4-4,
wow,
they did an angle to injure Sandman, who wasn't going to be able to work because of the cracked ribs. And in the angle, Douglas used Sandman's cane on him. Sandman was mad backstage because someone else was using his gimmick, and backstage the two were about to go at it. At this point, the different versions of the story differ, and it was that they were first held apart, and for whatever reason, some of the guys acting as peacemakers said screw it and wanted to see them fight. Todd Gordon and or Sabu or Pitbull 2 were the ones who pretty much broke the thing up. Neither guy backed down, although with 1 week to go before a pay-per-view show, the intelligent thing in this situation would have been to avoid the fight scene, since it would be stupid to risk an injury before the most important show in the company history, especially for Sandman, who has never been on a show this big and is already going in with cracked ribs. Paul Heyman spoke to both and got them in a room together for a long time, and they talked everything out. Hack, what do you remember about this?
Actually, a lot of what he says is absolute truth. Now, okay, let's start from the beginning. What was the first part of it?
The first part of it was that Shane Douglas was upset because Brian Lee and Pitbull 2 broke a table.
Shane was going off in the back, and first of all, I don't like him anyway, and second of all, he was 100% wrong in the situation. If something like that's going to happen, and you're working main event guys on that show, you're not Vince McMahon. You don't go blast them in front of the rest of the boys yelling, "They should be fired. They should be fired." As soon as I heard that, he came back through the back. I walked right up to Brian Lee. That's the only one that I had to talk to. I'm like, when you guys went through that table, Shane was running around back here saying that you guys should be fired. That's all I had to do.
Okay. So,
and Brian did the rest.
And Shane Douglas did not like that.
I don't care. He was wrong.
Yeah.
He was 100% wrong. And Brian's my boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And Pitbull's my boy.
Yeah. I mean,
so did you ever like come to blows with Shane? Or?
No. Well, let's go to Scranton the next week.
Okay. So we're in Scranton next week.
Here we go.
Okay.
So I'm hurt. Shane's out there with Chris, maybe Francine. I don't know if Bigelow was out there or not at that time. Triple Threat's out there. And I'm out there, and I tell everybody before we go out there, because I'm getting dropped in the very beginning of the match, so I don't have to do the match. I'm carted off and gone. I tell everybody, please, nobody use the cane in the match. I'm gone 30 seconds. I turn around, and Shane's got my cane in his hand hitting somebody. I forget who was on my side. I don't even remember that. So that part the guy got right. Everything else was 100% totally wrong. The only person that was in a CYO in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And imagine if anybody's there. Imagine, all right, everybody can imagine this. The football, making out with a girl under the stands at a football field.
Hell yeah.
So the CYO was like that. It was just inside. So the stands would go up, and then all the locker rooms were underneath the stands in like a 50-yard length. So there was probably 10 little small locker rooms. I was at the very last one on the right with Terry Funk, and I forget who was dressing in there. There was a couple guys in each locker room. The only person that was in the locker room with me and Shane when I confronted him was Terry Funk.
Okay.
No other boys were there. Nobody else was there.
So this is telephone, telewrestler.
Whatever. That's all bullshit. The only people there were that saw that confrontation, the only person that saw that conversation was Terry Funk.
And how did that go?
Terry Funk's like, God damn it, guys. I wish I... You know what I'm saying? He's like, boys will be boys. And that's the way it is. But he doesn't want to see a fight.
Yeah. So did Paul squash the beef with you guys, or was that...
No.
Okay, so that's
not... No, woman thing. Did.
Woman did.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
Nancy.
Nancy, I love you, girl.
Yeah, shout
out to Nancy. Yeah, but she was... I think I told the story where Shane didn't want to drop the belt to me, and Nancy's like, I got this. Give me a couple minutes. She comes back an hour later. She's like, yeah, he's dropping it. This is how we're doing it.
Oh, so 90-
that was all Nancy. That wasn't Paul's finish.
You're talking in
that
95.
That was Nancy's finish.
This is in 95 now.
Whatever. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
She's got to have some good tricks up her sleeve. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
She cut her teeth on Kevin Sullivan for a decade and a half or whatever.
I don't know if cutting the teeth is a problem.
Well, cutting the teeth means learning. She learned from the best booker in the business for years.
No.
One of the top five ever, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, down in Florida,
Well, you've said she taught you a lot.
So a lot. Man, Nancy taught me so much.
What a legend.
I was so lucky for Kevin to hand her to me when he left.
Yeah. So the pay-per-view itself, man, in the Observer, it got a 84% thumbs up. Those 18 people that gave it a thumbs down definitely deserve a kendo shot, because I love the show.
All right, so you told me only 100 people was...
No, it's percentage of people.
All right, no, 84 and 18. That's pretty close to 82 and 84.
84% gave it a thumbs up out of 171 voters.
Okay.
18 thumbs down, 14 were thumbs in the middle. So I thought it was a great show. So getting to the show itself, this was such a historical show. At the time, when you guys got onto pay-per-view, and like for anybody out there that doesn't understand, there was only two wrestling companies that really had pay-per-views, WCW and WWF, and they were both well-established on pay-per-view. You guys are the younger brother. You guys are the little brother. You guys really are this ragtag group. What did it mean to all the boys and the girls getting onto pay-per-view?
The world.
Yeah.
Well, was Terry Funk the only guy in the locker room that had ever been on a pay-per-view before?
Probably Shane. Shane probably had worked some in
WCW. Maybe with the Dynamic WCW. Dudes or something like that.
He worked some in WCW,
But there's not a lot of guys.
Other than that, when I'm going back and thinking of all the guys in the card, I know, we'll get to the matches on the card shortly. I'm trying to think of anybody else.
Yeah, but either way.
Not many.
It was palpable in the locker room. The ECW locker room is like I just explained, the CYO locker room where everybody's split up. WWE, there's locker rooms all over the place. WCW in those buildings, like those big buildings and stadiums, there's locker rooms everywhere. You won't see certain people sometimes unless they're in catering with you at the same time. But in the ECW locker room, it was one big circle. It was one. Imagine a building 25 yards wide by 30 yards long, 40 yards long, and every single wrestler was in that circle, and the middle was open, and up by Gorilla, which is where you right before you go out to the ring, you're in a Gorilla, and there would be a TV there. So it was much more of a house of a home and friends, and you could see everybody and how they react all the time. And I had been there every single solitary show, and people were different.
Yeah,
people were different that night. The guys weren't joking around. Guys weren't their normal selves, and I could just see it. And I sit there talking to his mom. I'm like, I'm going to kill this show tonight.
Well, Tosh, I'm like, telling you, to give you perspective, because you were just at the 2300 Arena in the back area. Like when you walk in that back door and you see the steps to the left, not there. None of that's there. If you kept walking straight to the, not there. That's all cut off. That's all cut off, and then
it was
you keep
a huge
going,
open area.
And then you like, you have your steps to the Eagle's Nest, but then there's not like the big gorilla area that it had there. Like you had where we were sitting, where Hack's crew or whatever we called it was
hack
sitting.
Pack.
Yeah, the Hack Pack, and then the curtain right there, like that confinement from like where you went up to the Eagle's Nest to that to the back door was it. Everybody. Literally, that was the locker room. Everybody was right there. That was the whole thing. So it was, like Hack said, it was everybody was right there talking to each other, seeing each other, going over the match, and everybody's watching the monitor. Everybody's watching the monitor. Everybody's
and
watching everybody's match.
It was black and white 12-inch.
Right. And yeah, it ain't no big
you
screen.
You had to
like,
get there. It was like an amphitheater, and the monitor was on the stage in the amphitheater, and it was like 6-7 deep in a half a circle standing around it watching it. And the biggest thing to me was I always liked watching stuff, so I didn't want to repeat it.
Okay. It makes sense.
How many times have we watched a pay-per-view, especially AEW, and there's, what, 27 super kicks in the first three matches?
Yep.
You don't want to repeat the same thing.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to ask about too, heck, because I've seen this was included in Beyond the Mat, the pre-show speech that Paul gave you guys, were you ready to run through a brick wall after that speech? Do you remember that speech?
I was calm then. It's so weird. A couple other podcasts I've done in my life, which is maybe like 5 or 10, I've been asked that same question. I was just super calm in my own space right then. Like, Paulie's talking, but I'm listening, but I'm not listening.
Okay.
You know, I'm so concentrated on what exactly I'm doing that night.
Yeah.
So I don't really remember it, but he could easily get. I've seen him give the best, like, Vince Lombardi speeches that there are.
Yeah, no, I mean,
like, the rally the troops. Are you kidding me?
It recently was going around on Twitter, and we retweeted it from the account too. But it's like, this is the show speech is like an all time speech, and Heyman hearing that.
Fuck just, you, you're wrong. Yeah. Fuck you, we're wrong.
Yes. Like his Hall of Fame speech. I'm yes. sure. Something like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it was absolutely incredible. That, you know, something that I always go hand in hand with Barely Legal. Because, you know, it really was a statement of show. It was telling the world of wrestling, nah, you do it this way, we do it this way.
Now, Hack, was it just to get on to pay-per-view, was it just money-based? Like, was that...
Well, yeah, but also logistic-based. To get on to pay-per-view right then, what they could do now in a box the size of a 48-inch TV square, imagine a square box 4 feet by 4 feet, they could do with that now for a pay-per-view, and it used to take one tractor trailer for that.
Wow.
The logistics of just how many tractor trailers you needed just for that, and there was so many that we just made it because they blew the power out on the whole street.
Yeah.
Right as it was ending. Oh, man. So that was something that was huge, the logistics.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why I'm asking, like, what was, like, not necessarily like the difficulty of you guys getting on pay-per-view, but just like, I don't know what you know as far as what it takes a wrestling promotion to get onto pay-per-view.
Nah,
just like was it, like you're saying, just the logistics, or is it just money, or do you need to have?
Well, the amount of 100 G's, the just amount to put of up or something ridiculous.
Like the viewership, like, do you need to show like a certain amount of viewership?
Well,
or
first of all, what I think is, if I think the way the business is now that I look back at it, is if whoever the pay-per-view company is, and all those trucks need to be paid for, they don't care if you have one viewer.
Right.
So somebody has to pay for all that up front.
Yeah.
So that's where the money's in line.
Yeah, and I don't know, too, if, like, being ECW hindered you guys, too. Because cable companies were probably not chomping at the bit to put on this extreme hardcore wrestling with cursing and women.
Well, but it's pay-per-view, though.
It is, but at the same time, they still are...
Hey, pay-per-view companies are
probably wondering, are people watching this?
Yeah,
like, episodically on television every week?
Listen, I was still like 13... Well, I wasn't 13 at the time, but your little kids are watching Foggy Screams trying to, you know, spank your monkey to this in the pay-per-view channels.
Hey, Tommy, like, Dreamers, who's he got Francine upside down for a pile driver, like, so split.
Yeah. Going, it's like, yeah, that's what I mean. It's not exactly family friendly. I don't know. I mean, look, it's awesome.
That's what was great about it.
Yeah, no. That's
real quick, I've been watching a couple of old episodes of Dark Side of the Ring.
Okay.
Chris Adams did a blind angle that I didn't even remember. So that's probably where Paulie stole my blind angle. And there was something else, another angle that Paulie took from old school stuff that he didn't really write himself.
Wow, okay, all right, I like this. Look, there's no original idea. Everybody's ripping
it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard. You drink a beer and smoke a cigarette in the ring.
There's an original. I'm one-on-one.
I mean, seriously.
No, you are an original.
And that's 1990, and that was 1995 or 94.
Yeah, no. So the show itself, it opened up with Joey Styles in the ring, and there was technical difficulties with the mic. I kind of felt bad for him, but the Dudleys came out, and they were chanting, fuck you, Devon, and that was awesome. And Devon and them, They have Joel Gertner with them.
Trey, hold on for a second. Please do not gloss over the fact of how much natural heel heat those guys had.
Oh, yeah. No, they were getting
that
so much.
That building was frothing at the mouth for those guys. And that's even hard to do in the ECW arena because the more hardcore you are, the more you get over.
The more you're over.
Yeah. But Bubba would grab the mic. A lot of people didn't see it on that pay-per-view, but Bubba would pick people out and call and be like, is that your kid, that fat piece of crap?
Yeah,
that's sitting next to you.
What was it, the Heat Wave pay-per-view? Like, where he just rips
Yeah, he almost caused a riot.
Heat Wave 97 or something like that, where he just completely eviscerates.
Yeah, but that's heat. And also, I want to get to a point, so because I made it later, that pay-per-view taught other fans how to react. Because that crowd with... You have a... Bischoff takes it up the ass sign in the crowd. You know what I'm saying? And the way they would be like, the chance that we would make, that the other crowds now learn. ECW's audience was super important, and nobody ever gives them the credit for that.
Yeah, I would say the ECW audience, and perhaps, you know, the Philadelphia wrestling audience, taught fans, like the Smart Mark crowds and even the non-Smart Mark crowds, like, this is how you react. This is what you do. Like, this is...
I couldn't believe it. RVD in that match in the...
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but RVD got a UF'd up chant.
Yes, he did.
In that.
Yes, he did.
I only had that happen to me once, the time I blew up my left knee. Okay. And I would have said that never happened to
RVD. But it's, dude, they'll hate you so much.
And then he'll love you.
Oh, my God.
But then, like, you work your ass off and you perform your ass off and they're the first to clap. They're the first to everything. Like, God, it's...
They appreciate the art.
Yeah.
They were such a huge part of ECW, and they should be in the Hall of Fame.
They were a family of their own.
Yep.
Those people were a whole big family. They all knew each other because every month they all sat in the same exact seats.
Yeah. Shout out the hat guy.
Yeah,
Hawaiian shirt guy.
So many of them. The Faith No More guy.
Sign guy Dudley came out of the crowd, didn't he?
Yeah.
Franny came out of the crowd. Franny was a audience person.
Wow. So Joel Gertner was doing the intros. Joel Gertner's ring intros, the little rhymes that he would have every week or every month, it would always be different.
I
always pop for Joel Gertner, but this especially was awesome. He did his little intro, and then out come the Eliminators. I know a lot of people are saying, like, the Eliminators, they didn't really age that well. Some people say that online, I hear. I love the Eliminators.
That match was great.
This match was
all... The Eliminators were great in that match.
It was all spots. And it was all... It was basically an Eliminators showcase. The Dudleys just sold their ass off. It was pretty much just like a 5-6 minute squash. And they got all their shit in. And they got so much shit in. And they hit pretty much everything in the match. And I enjoyed it for what it was. It wasn't like a great match or anything, but... Man, seeing Cronus do the flying moves he did, the kicks
so underrated, he did. Man, that dude. Yeah. Such a great athlete.
I don't think it would have been as much of an Eliminator showcase if Bubba Ray broke his ankle early in that match.
Oh, okay.
Going over the top rope, what was it, the clothesline over the top rope?
I think he
broke his ankle on that match, and he wasn't really able to do anything, ended up going to the hospital in a boot as soon as that match ended.
Yeah,
and right after that, Perry shoots him into the corner.
Well, and he still took the finish well.
No, he worked, dude. He worked really well.
Yeah, well. I had a broken neck. C4 cracked in half.
All right,
and
relax,
finished the match.
Dude. Yeah, all whatever.
Yeah, everybody does it, though. I'm just saying that there's so much stuff that happens in matches, broken bones and stuff, but people still finish because your adrenaline's so high, it's not going to hurt you.
And that's barely legal. Pay-per-view, like, dude. Dude, I ain't there was so much out of this match, like, dude.
Yeah, like, my leg's gonna have to fall off.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
I loved how they opened it up too with a total elimination to sign Guy Dudley. Like, that was the very first thing they did, was total elimination.
Well, it was great because the Dudleys play chicken shit, go out of the ring, sign Guy takes the Eliminator, so they can come in and then get on them. So I like that part about it.
They did everything under the sun. Saturn and Cronus. They did a double springboard that was like Sabu-esque. That Saturn hit. I loved it for what it was. And then after the finish,
dude, was any big man doing the stuff that Cronus was doing in any company back then?
Nope. Scorpio could do everything that he was doing.
No, but he's not as big as Cronus.
6'4", 6'5", like
okay. Cronus. I know both of them intimately when Cronus was alive, and they're both basically the same size.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, maybe they're both the same size.
All right. Yeah.
Score might be an inch smaller or something like that. But they're both the same.
Because
Perry's like 5'6".
Okay, maybe that's
why. Yeah, Perry's short. I was just with him at WrestleMania.
Yeah. The one thing, too, I want to call out on this match before we move on here. The Eliminators then gave total elimination to Joel Gertner, and he proceeded to sell that injury with the neck brace for, I think, like the next 4 years of the company. Like, he was always in a neck brace from that point on.
Is that what the neck brace is from?
Is that where it started? That's all his idea and stuff, too. You know, it's just perfect.
I love
the
it.
The neck like, brace and the bow tie?
Yeah, it's like Bob Orton selling a broken arm for years.
Perfect.
It was so good.
Because that's how you get stand out from everybody else, every other announcer. You know what I'm saying? Nobody does that stuff. People, that was the best part about our company. Paul gave you room to go and create your own character and do this, you know, and do that, whatever.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked on the show is they really hyped up the main event really well. They had pre-tapes before for all you guys. Your pre-tape was first, and you were hitting yourself in the head until you opened up a cut. Do you remember anything about doing the pre-tape or anything about that?
I wanted to bleed.
Okay, just so
you wanted to bleed. And that's easy. If you hit yourself with that yellow, there's a yellow string that holds like the cane together. So if you hit yourself with that yellow string, you're going to pop easily.
Okay. Next.
Oh, yeah, another thing. First guy to walk to the ring, bloody and bleed before he even gets into the ring.
There you go.
Just saying.
Self-putting over.
Yeah, he puts himself over a lot here.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Sandman Podcast, listen to it where your podcasts are found.
That's the first time you ever said it correctly.
Yeah, way to plug it. Right. Way to plug it on our own show.
Oh, wow.
That's literally.
While they're
already listening, we need new listeners, Hack.
Way to go.
Hey, everybody, tell your friend. Yeah.
Chris Candido came out, and his arm was in a sling. Unfortunately, he tore his bicep a couple weeks before the show. Was not able to compete on it, but it did give us the RVD and Lance Storm match. Any memories of Candido, unfortunately, not being able to work the show? He did cut a little promo, Hack. Anything about that? Like, guys who didn't get to work the show, anything?
They were in a different... They're in this all the same room, but it's a little bit different of an orbit with those guys because of Shane.
Okay. So next up was the RVD Lance Storm match. It was interesting too because both these guys are kind of like RVD was in ECW in 1996, but he still wasn't the RVD that we knew later on the whole effing show. And Lance Storm has a mullet at this point.
Yeah, the disgusting rat tail. Sickest mullet. Man. Yeah, dude, that's not a mullet. It's a rat tail.
It's a rat tail.
That's okay. True.
You're right. It is a rat tail.
Yeah, he can work.
The blonde rat tail.
Yeah, facts. I mean, I thought the work in this match was really good. The fans were all over RVD from the get-go because I know at the start we did mention that, there was rumors about RVD jumping ship to WCW at this point. The fans were chanting, "You sold out" to him from the get-go, and he really fed into that as a heel. I thought the match was pretty good. Like you said, they did chant, "You fucked up" for the one missed spot.
Yeah, he slipped, jumped to the top rope, but he still turned it into a back elbow, that's how smart those fans were that they caught that even.
The other thing I wanted to make mention, I did have in my notes, that was Bill Apter, right, that he threw out of his way early in the match?
Bill Apter and also the other girl was there, the other girl photographer,
okay.
Linda Ruffo.
Okay, yeah, that's I thought so. It wasn't 100%. So they did chant, "You fucked up." They were having a pretty good match, but I don't know, the missed spot kind of took the fans out of it a little bit, it seemed like. What did you think of the match, Hack?
Great.
Okay, you loved it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the match was great. It was just super solid.
Yeah, and then
I'm not even like really good friends with RVD like I am now. I barely even knew him then.
Yeah. No, I thought it was really solid.
I knew he was awesome though.
Yes.
And he carried himself like he was awesome.
So you knew he was
not
gonna...
like cocky, but just, you know, when a guy walks into a room, you just know.
Yeah, you just know. He's got it like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I did also enjoy his post-match promo saying that he swallowed his pride with a win on his way. He'd be making more money either here or elsewhere. And he got a really good heel reaction for that line, which does then lead into later in the show as well.
Oh, and also here, in that match, you'll notice that the crowd, Lance hits RVD with some weak chair spots. And the crowd turned right on it.
Lance had like, dude, the worst chair shots. I know Lance like isn't like a dude who works a lot with chair. Like, that's not his forte at all. It's like, dude, it's barely legal. First pay-per-view, you got to lay it in a little bit.
Nope.
Lance, I don't know if he knew how to swing one.
Probably never had.
Like, I don't even know if he ever swung
a chair.
Yeah,
like you said, Howie, that's not what he did.
Yeah.
He probably was also trying to protect him, maybe. I don't know.
Well, yeah, a little bit of both.
No, but that was horrible. It was horrible. It was so light.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was not good. It was not good.
But great work, and Lance has always been a great worker. Just never
very underrated.
Just never could really
talk on the microphone. Right,
until he got with Justin Credible and the Impact Players. That's when it became on the mic. Something because Justin and all them. But yeah. Great worker.
Next up on the show, you know, I think that this was probably the best match work rate wise on the show.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, this was something special. And I really liked it, too, because it gave the show a completely different
flair. International flair.
It gave it a different flavor, right? And that's something that ECW shows always gave you.
I was just going to say
that. And for a pay-per-view, I mean, nobody, you know, WCW had the Lucha guys coming in at this point with the Cruiserweight division, and WWF made their attempts at different points in time to do, like, a lightweight division and some international talent.
Yeah, but the only reason they were doing that was because of Paul Heyman.
Right.
They didn't even have that division until Paul Heyman started it.
But the eye for talent and bringing in these Michinoku Pro guys, this was just incredible. And I thought it really, you know, this is the third match in the show. It gave the show a different feeling. I absolutely love this match. This was the great Sasuke, Gran Hamada, Masato Yagushi. They beat Men's Teo, Dick Togo, and Taka Michinoku. What a great match this was. This was just fantastic. I love Joey Styles on the call for this match. I love the streamers before the match.
Just knowing the moves, Joey.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I don't think, like, and this is by no means a knock at, you know, Jim Ross at the time or Tony Schiavone. Had they had to call that match, they would not have been able to.
They couldn't. If you were watching matches back then, when even when I got there in WCW, the luchador matches, they would just let it happen. They wouldn't. They would be like, "Oh, what a big move!"
Yeah, yeah.
Literally.
No, I know. And the fact that Joey was actually calling the maneuvers, I know a lot of people are, you know, Joey Styles, they say his work didn't really age that well. For the time that he was in and really doing the work that he did as an announcer, I really loved it. I thought he was awesome. And I love that he... One of the things I always liked as an ECW fan is that he would, like, take jabs at the other companies at different times. And I loved when he ripped into WCW for mentioning that Sasuke had beaten Ultimo Dragon and correctly pronounced his name instead of saying Ultimate Dragon, like, right. WCW did.
Yeah, he says, or Ultimate Dragon, yeah, in WCW. Like,
the little jabs that Joey Styles would do as a fan, if you know kind of stuff. And I actually like that. Like, I like when the companies take jabs at each other. I think they should do it more. I don't care. Like, I don't get all salty if, like, an AEW guy rips some WWE stuff. Do it. Do it. Because it gives it a little bit of... This is us. This is our town. This is our, you know, our team. And I like when they do that stuff. So
who was the first person to do it?
The first person to do it on commentary?
Who was the first person to grab a mic on another company and call out somebody else at another company?
I couldn't even tell you. Jerry Lawler, you guys Randy are Savage. Me. I mean, Randy Savage down in Memphis.
How about Shane Douglas?
Oh, Shane Douglas. Okay, yeah, Shane Douglas. Okay, yeah, okay. I was going even older school.
The birth of our company started on that.
Yeah, I mean, Shane Douglas would constantly call out Dick Flair. And,
we threw down there to the NWA champ, the most prestigious championship on the planet.
Yeah.
He threw it down. It started that day with him.
Yeah.
Tosh, do you know, I don't know, Tosh or Hack, I don't know if you know Joey's background and where exactly he came from?
No, I don't. I actually don't. I'm not really sure.
Do you know where Joey came from?
It's still 420 in my house. I did know at some point, I'm sure.
Because he came in and, like, dude, he calls those matches, like, solo, he calls those matches, he knows the moves, he knows everything. I don't know if he might have made up some move names himself or
good
whatever.
For him.
Yeah, right, or whatever, but, like, dude, he does a fucking fantastic job.
I mean, dude, how many years did he do it just him by himself?
Every year.
And he's
well, they put
awesome.
Cyrus with him.
And yes. Putting and Cyrus with him was... an amazing decision and because Cyrus was too. So good.
Well, and the only reason that happened was because Paulie was so smart. He knows that we're running out of money, and Paulie knows he's going with Vince afterwards. So
well,
he's
he created
running out of
the
money.
Network.
Exactly.
Yeah, he created the
Cyrus
network.
Was the network, so we needed to have a plausible human being
right,
to be the network. And that's how smart Paul was. When Paul would cut promos on US when we were on US Air or something, he knew we were only getting there for another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So he might as well be saying whatever the hell he wants against them.
Yeah,
it was great, but a lot of other guys would have turned tail and run and never would have done what he did. But he turned it all in a positive form.
Yeah, you know, I always loved some of that stuff when you guys were later doing that, ripping the TNN, the network stuff. So that was really cool. And I would say Joey Styles to me as a Philadelphia guy, second best Philadelphia
announcer.
He's
not a Philadelphia guy.
Well, no, I'm saying for a Philadelphia thing. Second best Philadelphia announcer that calls it by himself. Number one.
Tom McGinnis?
Tom McGinnis, our Sixers radio announcer.
Oh, he's the best.
I love Tom McGinnis, man.
Awesome.
I can't, these two will not let us see because they say that it's different than the network. I could be watching the NBA game on my TV upstairs. They're watching it down here. And the other night, I was literally 30 seconds ahead of them.
Okay.
By watching it. But I hate the NBA announcers. I would much rather listen to him on the radio as we're watching the game on TBS.
Okay, but if you were watching upstairs and listening to him on the radio, you'd still be ahead of us on the TV.
You'd have to slow down your TV by some DVR stuff or something.
You have to sync it up properly.
No, I disagree.
There
is no way it's 2024 it's not synced. Oh, you know what? It might
be
synced with PHL 17, maybe not TBS or TNT.
McGinnis isn't synced up with the TV. He's seeing it before it happens on the TV.
Anyway, we got down a road here talking about Tom McGinnis. Nobody had that on the...
He is awesome, though, as an announcer.
Sorry for all our listeners
awesome
around there.
We're excited.
Oh, baby!
A little Tom McGinnis for you. I love this Michinoku Pro match. I thought it was fantastic. You know, one thing I got to call myself out for as a wrestling fan. My friend Trevor recently corrected me. I thought a Falcon Arrow and a Michinoku Driver were the same move. For all you wrestling fans out there, do your homework and learn the difference between a Michinoku Driver and a Falcon Arrow, all right?
Yeah, how many people... Here, call us in next week and tell me if you actually do that.
Yeah, please do.
Anybody notice who the referee was in the match?
It was one of their own. They brought a referee.
It was a Japanese referee in the match.
And he really stayed out of the way for the most part. He let them
do
the
stuff. Well, he knows.
Well, makes sense.
Yeah, where was Red Shoes at? Where was Red Shoes at? Mexican
referee. Well, that's New Japan. New Japan. The next up was a promo from Stevie Richards. He was talking about being kind of like a low-life loser in his life.
The guy who didn't get the girl at prom or whatever.
And one of the things I like about the three-way is that all three of you guys had like a plausible story headed into that match with Raven if you won. So it's like, you know, obviously the Stevie stuff, turning against his mentor, standing up for himself. Obviously your feud hack. With the year before, with everything with you, Tyler, and obviously Terry Funk getting the title shot because Tommy Dreamer gave it to him. I thought it was a pretty good promo from Stevie. I thought he was pretty good. You know, he talked about being picked on and picked last for kickball as a kid. I thought it was a really good interview overall. What did you think of it, Ak?
I liked it.
Yeah.
And Stevie's so young here, and he got so lucky to learn at the hands of Scotty. And he absorbed it like a sponge. Stevie never missed a spot. He was always right there, right on for anything. He was great.
Yeah.
Loved working with him.
And has a hell of a super kick.
I had a great match with him when Raven went to. I dropped Raven off at rehab, and then there was another lucky thing for me. I lose the belt from Raven. Raven goes to rehab. Oh, darn, I got to win it off of Stevie while Raven's in rehab.
Just your luck.
I know. It was the best thing ever. I remember the day I dropped him off right now.
Wow.
He made me drive him in his convertible Mustang or whatever it was.
Okay. Cool.
Oh. What a day.
Shouts out to Raven. Next up on the show was Shane Douglas taking on Pitbull number 2. This was for the ECW TV title. Man, you know what? Douglas was doing some heavy, heavy heel stuff at this
serious
point.
Heat, though. That crowd hated his guts.
You know, Pitbull won. You know, he did the angle with the neck and everything, where he shook his neck with the halo on it. And there was a lot going into this match at the time, and a lot of different tricks of the trade that Douglas was doing for heat. A lot of, you know, chain in the boot, this and that. Did you have the guards outside of the ring? They were also teasing Rick Rude in this before he actually did come out. I don't know. What did you think of this match overall, Hack? Because to me, this was 20 minutes long. It was a little long rewatching it, and it kind of just, I don't know. I didn't.
Well, there wasn't a lot of spots going on. It's a lot of freewheeling out there with those two. And Anthony didn't really like Shane.
Okay.
Like Shane at all then, you know, so it wasn't like a kumbaya match.
And I was going to like,
let's go
that.
Out there.
And you did the spot with Pitbull number 1, Gary Wolf, who was at ringside with the neck brace. And then he got carried off by the Riot Squad. Anytime you see like a Riot Squad or a police
force, you're always like, who's under that
it's
hood?
Angle alert.
I forgot it totally. So when I was watching it, when the fake Rick Rude came out, I knew. Then it clicked in my head. But as I first saw the Riot Squad, I'm like, who are these dudes here?
Yeah, they did a couple things, and they also botched a lot of stuff in the match. Like, they tried to do the crotching spot on the guardrail in this match and just didn't hit it for whatever reason, and I don't know.
Honestly, to me, Hack, I was going to ask you if Anthony was trying to make Shane look bad.
Yeah, I don't, like, do you think that's possible?
No, Anthony's not. Anthony wasn't smart enough to do that.
All right, he looked super blown up.
Anthony was coked out of his mind, probably up for a couple days.
I was going to ask you if he was trying to make Shane look bad. I didn't know if there was bad blood there because there was a lot of botched spots. Well, there was a lot of this, that.
And it wasn't bad blood because of the neck being broken. I've watched it, and I've told Gary. Gary blamed Shane, and I'm like, dude, that was your bump.
Right. It wasn't intentional.
Like, I'm like, Gary, that's your bump. You were close with Gary at that time.
Yeah.
I'm close with him, but I couldn't agree with him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. To me, that's your bump. But he's like twisting my shoulder or whatever. I'm like, well, that's how you remember it.
Okay.
You know, so, but yeah, but, and Anthony was a follower, not a leader. So, you know, but a lot of people didn't like Shane's attitude in the locker room either.
Well, I could imagine he would rub some people the wrong way. Yeah. He probably had a bit of an ego and an attitude at the time.
I don't know. It was like, you said it was 20 minutes long?
Yeah.
It was like 20 minutes of the most agonizing shit that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the storyline of the whole Gary neck brace thing, like, it was really, really bad.
Yeah, I didn't care for the match. You know, you did the angle at the post-match where...
That's the thing. You're not. If you're going to do that angle, then why do 20 minutes out there?
Right.
If you're going to do that angle, do 8. Do your start.
You're already getting... You already got the crowd with the angle. Yeah. So, like, dude, it just went way too long.
Yeah.
Call that Shane.
Yeah, maybe Shane was saying, I got to get my shit in. I don't know.
Which could be.
Yeah. So they did a couple of near falls. They did a schoolboy for a near fall. And then Douglas out of nowhere hits his belly to belly for the win.
Yeah, it was anticlimactic.
Yeah, and then after the match, so he had us on the Rick Rude robe. And he makes out with Francine. Douglas attacks him, and then he goes to unmask him. And then it comes out... the real Rick Rude, who takes off the Riot Squad mask. He took off the helmet. Douglas pulled it off, and then pulled off the other one. It was Brian Lee. Rude punches out Douglas, and Lee chokeslams him to a big pop.
I love the way that Franny was selling her lust to Rick Rude. She kept looking back.
She was swooned.
Yeah, she was. She kept looking back, and he's pulling away at the wrist. That. And I really love that. I thought that was like really like real subtle work there. I was like, all right, Franny. I you know, yeah.
Kevin from Dayton's probably jealous.
Yeah, Kevin. Sorry, Kevin. this match was nothing special, though. I did not care.
Horrifying.
The swerve at the end, though, was everything.
Yeah.
You know?
So I had fun. I had fun at the end. So
Yeah. The crowd popped for it at the end.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually think that maybe the reason why Rue was under a mask, because he had that Lloyd's of London policy that was paid off, and he couldn't work. He couldn't be in the ring or something until he got his full payment. Because there was one of the Road Warriors got one of them. Lloyd's of London for, let's say, $30,000 a year would insure you for and pay you like $300,000 a year until you're like 60 years old. They did that for a couple of years. A couple of boys got paid off of them, and then they're like, no, we're not doing that anymore. But I think that's why Rick originally came out with a mask on, because they needed to buy some time until he was allowed to be on TV again.
Yeah, maybe. Next up on the show, this was a match that was a year and a half in the making. Taz and Sabu. So Paulie keeps them apart. You do the big angle at November to Remember 95. Taz is on a huge stretch where he's just squashing guys, choking everybody out left and right. Sabu is Sabu. So this match was just built up huge. I know they probably would have liked to get to it a little bit earlier if they got on pay-per-view earlier. But, I really loved it. The crowd heat was there. I know a lot of people looking back on this match kind of went lower on it. I really like that they did a lot of mat work early to build in this match. I love the swerve at the end. I thought the finish was right. I thought it was physical. I thought they were both right there. I don't know. What did you think of this match, Oliver?
I thought it was good. I thought it was physical, like you said. I don't know if Sabu's nose was broken or...
He hit him with that crossface, man.
Yeah, or just got busted out. Like, he just caught him, or if his nose was broken or not. But, I mean... Must be pretty hard to work with a gushing blood nose, busted nose.
Yeah, I thought it was really strong. I mean, Taz at this point is basically doing like a UFC fighter gimmick. That's not the easiest thing to work a 10, 15-minute match with. And Sabu and him, they worked in the Sabu spots, and they worked in all the Taz spots, and they still put over the Kata Hajime. I thought it was awesome, for what it was. I know previously when I watched this, I was like, eh. I don't know if it didn't meet the expectations at first, but now when I went back and watched it again, I was like, the mat work they were doing, and I love Taz just like, here, try to take my leg, you know? And then seeing Sabu do some of the mat work that he could do, because Sabu can work.
Yeah, he really can, you know?
Like
he's known for the high-flying.
Yeah, but he was in Japan more than he was in the United States making money back in those days. So, yeah. And you know what the difference of the work rate is from that country to our country back in those days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There were plumbers, and Salvatore Cicere, and nails in WWF then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was cutting his teeth over there. But there was a big problem with the match, and I'm surprised none of you got it.
Okay.
You talk about the turn at the end?
Oh, well, I haven't mentioned the turn at the end yet.
You just said you liked the turn at the end.
Well, no, I did. I did enjoy the Fonzie.
There was a problem with it, though.
Okay, tell me what you thought was the problem.
So, at the end, Fonzie ends up leaving Taz and going with RVD and...
Sabu.
And Sabu.
Saying that he bet money on Sabu when he went with Sabu.
Okay. So, why was Taz put over in the match then? Wouldn't have Fonzie done something if he bet to make sure that that Taz didn't win?
Yeah, there's a logic gap there. I'm not going to argue.
That's all. I'm a lot on that little logic stuff.
Yeah,
that's
no,
all.
I'm not going to argue. There's definitely a logic gap there, right? Like, you think Fonzie would have done something in the match at that point to do the turn in the match instead of post-match. But I think they wanted to keep Taz strong. And then just 2 weeks later, Sabu wins the belt in Born to be Wired against Terry Funk. So I don't think it really hurt Sabu at all, because you put the belt on him very shortly after.
Hey, Funk only had the belt for 2 weeks.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Fact check that, please, Ollie.
Yeah, fact check.
How long did Funk have the belt for after that?
Yeah, we'll have to take a look. I'm pretty sure it was just 2 weeks
ago. Yeah, and the match was great, but you have to understand something also. There's not any love lost in calling any spots like that because, so first of all, Sabu doesn't want to lose to anybody. He refused to lose to me until I told you that I never had to win a match. And Sabu had no problem with that because I wrestled him so much. But Sabu didn't want to lose to anybody because that's the way the Sheik taught him.
Okay.
You know, he was old school like that. So Sabu was like, no, I can't lose. That's going to hurt me. So he's losing that match to Taz right there. He's not happy about that.
Okay, so he was
upset. He's not happy about that, and he doesn't really like Taz in the first place. So there's the dynamic right there.
So what kind of schmoozing and finessing does Paul Lee have to get
for him? He lets the boys work it out.
Oh, all right. You're saying they just worked it out amongst themselves?
The boys were. Paulie's been around. He knows he was in the. Imagine the hard ass stuff that he saw in the old like NWA days when he first started going through and UWF and all that. The locker room will work it out.
Okay.
And that was always Paul's philosophy.
Well, that's certainly true. I have to hack check myself here. I did just look it up. Born to be Wired was 5 months later, so it was in August of 97. So Sabu gets the belt 5 months later, quite 2 weeks later.
Oh, all right.
I was way off.
I mean, it would have made sense to me if he did, though. I wouldn't have complained at all, but yeah,
I was way off.
Because you need the credibility of Terry winning your first pay-per-view.
Right. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. Anything else you want to add to this match? Talking about it, maybe this is a year and a half in the making for this match. What do you think?
Oh, Taz actually cut a great promo.
Okay, but the pre-match promo was awesome.
You know me, I don't want to put Taz over ever, but that was a great, because it was different and it was street. It was a street thing. I hate you. You hate me. I want to not kill you, because nobody's really using the kill word there. But it was a street promo. It was kind of like a promo that Rocco Rock from The Public Enemy would have cut when he was that like mean dude and he would look into the camera. You know, that's like the street of it.
Yeah, I love the towel over him too with the pre-tape.
Well, and also the little threads hanging down. It's not like I just bought it at Walmart.
Yeah,
no, this is my towel. You know, the threads makes that towel everything to me.
Yeah. Now, the
texture that he puts in front of his face.
I loved it. I thought it was cool. And then you do the post-match angle where Fonzie's then linked with Sabu and RVD, and that lasts the duration of ECW. I mean, they're linked together forever at that point. And still to this day, I mean, like Fonzie, the man who calls it right down the middle.
None of them like Taz. They wanted to be together.
Stop burying Taz. No, I know.
No, dude, it's just I don't want to bury anybody. That's not my thing. I'm just telling you what the exact facts were in the locker room going on.
Yeah.
Because at that time, I'm starting to get to know Seth, because me and Fonzie are traveling from Florida together every week. So, but we would have to break apart when we got into the locker room because he was going doing his Taz thing and I'm doing me and my Nancy thing.
Right.
And so his idea, he always wanted us to be friends. So when Fonzie ends up getting together with them, both neither Van Dam or Sabu really wanted to be my friend. It was like Fonzie was like, no, he's not like that. He's like, trust me, I travel with him and everything. He had to talk him into it. So Sabu used to go to the he decided he doesn't want to fly. He doesn't like flying or whatever. So he buys this big tour bus. It's basically a tour bus. You know, with the big bed in the back. You got the bathroom. You can take a shower.
Like an RV?
Yeah. A tour bus, RV. And then you got when you walk in, there's a kitchen table there. And if you flip it over, it turns into a bed and stuff like that. And Sam, he just started driving this thing. It's the first week. And Fonzie's saying, Sam Ann's going to come with us and everything will be great.
You really popped yourself.
I got.
He he's tickled right now, guys. He's laughing.
I flew in. It was Pittsburgh, Boston, something. And when I flew in, somehow it was super hot out. So they had these bags that would keep stuff cold in them. So I put all my beers in that bag and I put some ice in there and I'm carrying like it's my pocketbook with a case of beer on me. I stick it down in the front seat right next to Sabu. He's getting ready to start drive to take off. As soon as we make the first left hand turn, my bag falls over and every beer goes all over the place. All the ice goes all over the floor.
Great first impression.
And Fonzie's like, "Hey, Daddy, everything's fine. Daddy.
I swear he's good, Dad. I swear he's good, Dad."
That was my first real experience with Sabu.
Okay, and he ended up like,
because I hadn't worked with him yet at that point.
Yeah,
or I hadn't worked with RVD at that point. Yet.
Yeah, nah, man. So next up on the show here was your match. It's the main event of the show.
Oh my God,
kind of, sort of, but it is the main event. It's Terry Funk taking on Big Stevie Cool Stevie Richards and the Sandman Hack. I absolutely love this match. I know I am biased here as always, but I thought your work in this match was absolutely tremendous. I thought the work for the match right here, like, this could have easily been a cluster, right? You have Terry Funk, who's 53 years old at this point. You have Stevie Richards in a pay-per-view main event when he's,
a straight babe in the woods kid.
Yeah, and then
the drunk.
And I've been in the business 5-6 years or whatever at that point.
Yeah, I mean, like, this match was so awesome. So the one thing that was really cool is, I know I put it up on our Twitter a couple weeks ago and our Instas, you offering the beer to the Funker. Was that planned before the match?
Yes, of course. That was all me.
That was all you?
That was all me.
Okay.
I said, "Terry, I want to offer you beer." And I didn't have anything else after that. I when I said that to him, I said, "I want to offer you a beer." And I'm like waiting for him to do. I don't know what's going to happen because I didn't really have a spot. Because you have to understand, when you sit down with three people, even just two people, and when it's more, it becomes, when you're formulating a match together, it's like, hey, let's just throw shit against the fan. Anything that comes off the top of your head could not be too crazy, because some things that I've said that I thought were totally insane, somebody would be like, "That's great." And it's just vice versa.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about stuff, so the first thing I want to do is, well, it's a pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
What do I want to do? I want to separate. I don't care about Stevie right here. I want to put me and Funk in this situation, not knowing what it is, but I know it's a pay-per-view, and this is the most famous dude in the building.
Yeah, easily.
So I want that moment. I know I want. I'm good enough now because I've been through. It's been like 4 years since I worked with Lawler, so I'm better than I thought now that when I rewatched the match today. But I knew I wanted that moment with him. I didn't know what it was going to be, and I'm like, "Hey, I'll offer you a beer." He's like, "Well, no. I'm like, "That's fine. Then I'm going to chug the whole freaking thing myself after I just chug like four."
Yeah.
I don't even think I was dumping them into people's, because I fast forwarded through my entrance. I don't know if I was dumping them in people's mouths.
No.
So I was drinking every single one. I drank a six pack in my entrance.
Well, you spit them out. Whatever.
So let me ask you a little bit about putting the match together backstage. So you got Paulie. You got Raven.
No.
You got... No?
They're
not involved with any of this?
Not putting our match together.
Okay. So maybe that's a bigger picture thing. So just for your
Paulie
match...
Paulie left it to us. Paulie's like, "Terry's going over." That's it.
That's it?
That's what he would do. Paulie's not a... Well, there's going to be a DDT, and then there's going to be this, and there's going to be this. He's like, "Terry's going over."
Figure it out.
Half hour.
Dude, I would always watch you guys. Like, that's what I did. When I was younger, I would literally... Paulie never really did that with anybody. I would go around to, like, as a little kid and just listen to everybody put together their matches. Like, always, constantly, everybody was putting together their own shit. And, like, that's how I learned, and, like, that's how I know now, like, putting together matches. Like,
how some shit's bullshit, how other shit's that, like how that, like I have credible, like dude, I've watched so many guys put together matches because that's all ECW was. That's like, that's where
we,
I get my, like,
give you a perfect example. We went down to, and I wanted to bring them down to the Bubba Ray school in Florida.
Right.
First night we're there, they put a match in the ring and Billy Gunn's there. And Billy Gunn's and after this match, they just went through, and I'm standing right at ringside, and it's, and I know it's kids, you know, that are just learning, but they were little, they were all damn good there, you know what I'm saying? At the point, everybody was there that when I was there that night, and they did this match, and Billy gets right up, he goes, "What did you think about that? What did you think?" And all the other kids are like, he points at me. I said, "Well, I was entertained." He points at Ty, and Ty's like, "No, I didn't like this part of it." And Billy's like, "Yeah, that's exactly what it did." And then he went on. He was like, "Why did you do this? Why this? Why this? Why this?"
Yeah.
It's like watching an AEW match now. Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, some people have the mind for the business and some people don't. And obviously, Ty, you got the firsthand experience.
But it was more or less just like putting Paulie over and putting the ECW guys over because they did their matches. Yeah. You know, like it was their thing. It wasn't like a whole produced, you know, show.
Like you would have an agent in the WWE, you'd have so much other stuff.
All right, so in the Wrestling Observer, Dave Meltzer writes in, "I don't know where the gimmick begins and ends with Sandman, but he seems to live it totally. And he's going to hurt someone seriously if he goes in the ring loaded doing all these dangerous stunts." Hank,
never hurt anybody ever.
I just wanted to get to that. I can't recall ever. You ever hurting anybody in the ring.
Ever.
Ever.
Just doesn't happen. You're getting a hard cane shot.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I might catch your ear or something like that, but I never hurt anybody ever.
Yeah, and like,
I don't do moves to hurt people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're
right. I don't do moves to hurt people.
I know, but you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time or something. But that, as far as I can remember, I don't know if you.
Well, everybody in business will tell you that. Yeah. You know, if you hurt people, other wrestlers don't like you.
Yes,
and that's the bottom line.
Right. So,
because yeah. Stone Cold says,
and I know, and I know that walking around WrestleCon, that anybody who's anybody who has Hack doesn't even have to walk up to them; they walk up to him, they respect him, his knowledge, whatever, everything he's got in the business, he's respected by some of the most top people, whether you would know that or not.
Yeah, no, I look at it, man.
I go up to Rikishi. Rikishi's at, because I don't want to ask him for a picture because I'm not like that. I go up, and I had a camera guy with me there and everything. I'm like, "No, you guys stay back. I just want to say hi to him because that whole family, that I know them all. I've worked with every single one of them." He's like, "Oh, come on. We got to take a picture."
Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, Rikishi." How about a stink face?
I started with Alpha. But I my first year, I started, let's say, March 6th. I had my first match June 9th. By July that summer, I had wrestled a main event against Alpha in like Allentown, Scranton, one of those Reddings, something like that.
Wow.
And then I would go up to do his TV every once in a while. And then I've worked with every single one of them.
So back
not that I remember.
Back to this main event match. You guys started off with the headlock spot, which I really liked. I really liked a lot in this match where you guys are working. You're not just working these two guys, one guy powders. These two guys, one guy powders. It's a three-way dance. You know,
that was very important.
It's you beat up Stevie, I beat up Stevie. You beat up Stevie, I beat up Stevie.
Yeah, a lot of it was, but a lot of it was, you know, some of it was funk too.
But that was important to us. It's a three-way. We want to represent it as a three-way. Joey put it over like that it was special, that it was a three-way match.
Yeah.
So it was important to us to keep us all in the ring together. So now let me get to it. Before you even talk, let me tell you how we put this match together. We went out there with maybe, it's kind of a match that I would go out there with Sabu in a singles match with, or Cactus Jack in a singles match with, where it's ideas. This is what we're going to get to. If I say, "Hey, this is the spot we're doing now, this is the spot." And So basically, I'm out there and I'm controlling everything from after the beginning when we do that first opening spot. I'm going to take away from that because everybody has a tackle drop down hip toss opening spot. Besides that, we only had maybe another 8 things that we really wanted to do, and then you just get around to them. So really, 90% of that match was free flow.
Okay.
Was just working.
Even after you brought like the ladder in.
Yeah, well, you bring the ladder in. I'm in total control right here. I know how much time we have. And the ref hasn't been buzzing me yet about anything. So once I get that ladder in, I throw. What a great shot. See Terry in there launching over the top rope. Bam, right on the back of his head.
Yeah.
That was great.
So did you get any hesitancy when you saw Terry do some of the crazy things he was doing at his age here?
I have worked with him before.
Okay.
I just know that you can't put your head down being anywhere near Terry Funk because he'll do these windmill clubbering punches and each one of his hands is like a 5-pound steel anvil.
Yeah.
And he will drop you with one to the back of the head. I knew the windmill. Do not drop your head in front of him.
Well, heck, you said a great line to me when we were watching the match. We were watching back over. You were like, Terry will do anything at any time, so you have to constantly be ready.
Well, a perfect example, which I didn't get to tonight. I'm in a double ring steel cage match in Florida.
Oh, you told the story already.
And Terry
throws a chair at you
and knocks me on the head.
Right,
perfect example.
But not even like a throwing object. Just like you just have to be have your head on a swivel and just be ready for anything.
Yeah, like the crawling headbutt.
Yeah, that he gave to Stevie. He gave a crawling headbutt to Stevie.
There is no way anybody can be ready for that. To think like a Galapagos curved turtle is going to stick his head out and smack you on the side of your head. That's not a spot.
No, it's not, but it is.
Right, for Terry, it is.
No, Stevie's like, what's he crawling over here for? Boom, headbutt.
I loved it.
Terry and his cell. After he does the whirly bird ladder spot.
So, like, did he create that night? That was the first time he did it?
I gave him that spot.
You gave him that spot that night?
Yeah, that was my idea.
You're going to take credit for that?
Yeah. I had a ladder in my match all the way back to in the 90s.
That was first the 90s. It was 97.
Yeah, but I started wrestling in 90.
No, don't bother. Look, he's sad. If you guys could... It's not...
No, because these two will take any chance to bury me.
You buried yourself.
Well, no, because I said in the 90s, but in I had a ladder in the... Pap, did I have a ladder in the match?
Just because you were...
Down the street.
Just because you were the first one to bring a ladder in doesn't mean you created that spot.
He's taking credit for it.
Anybody ever seen it anywhere else before that?
No, I haven't.
All right, do not a hack check there.
Yeah. Not before Terry Funk did it.
Nobody was using ladders except me. I was the first person to use a ladder in a match. And it wasn't a ladder match. I found in every building, there was always a ladder.
So anybody
there was always a fire extinguisher. So for all my early matches in Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, so I don't get that wrong during hack check. Then I would have a fire extinguisher or a ladder in my matches all the way from like 91.
I'm not disputing you were the first with the ladder. I'm just saying, just because you were the first doesn't mean you created every ladder spot that follows.
This whirly
bird. The teeter-totter spots I created, they were all my spots. So every ladder spot was spot.
Let's
was
talk
mine.
About the teeter-totter, because the one you guys kind of hit. And then the other one, man, that ladder and you go flying. The ladder goes flying off camera.
Wait a minute. Well, let's talk about the elevation that I got as I leaped over the top rope.
They had to call air traffic control.
You jumped out the gym. Yeah. Yo, you were jumping out the gym there, man, with the Reebok kamikazes on.
I was going to say, he had his Air Max
store.
No. That's what you say every time.
Aren't they the Reebok kamikazes? No. Were they Air Maxes?
I don't know what they were.
A great
no, thing. They were Bobos.
No, I think they were there.
No, they were Nikes, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But the ladder hits me in the head.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'm a little bit out of camera, but yeah, I'm not expecting it. It's like...
Well, we were talking about the one where you got Stevie with on the outside of the...
guardrail.
No, when Stevie was
on the outside of the guardrail and you jump and hit him with the...
Yeah, the one
that goes flying, I think you could see Todd Gordon like running to see if it hit anybody
in the crowd. Todd Gordon's out there to tell me to go home.
Oh, okay.
Because I wasn't going home.
Oh, okay. So you guys do then, shortly after, do the powerbomb thing to Stevie, get him out of the match, and then you and Terry do a short segment. It was funny, too. The barbed wire that you had...
I was so mad.
...had all the streamers wrapped in it for the Michinoku Pro match.
I was so mad.
And, I mean, not that anyone in the building didn't know it was barbed wire, because it was, like, pulling at your shirt and stuff and everything. But like,
well, both my back and Terry. Terry had a 6-inch, if you watch him against Raven, it got his back, too.
Yeah, and look, Funk, you guys do that double powerbomb on Richards... and then you're wrapped in the barbed wire, and then like just, I don't know, you were all bloody too, and it was you tried going for like a leg drop, I think.
The most horrific leg drop I've ever seen. The most
precision leg drop ever in the history of professional wrestling.
He's got barbed wire wrapped around his entire torso and decides to drop a leg drop. A barbed wire leg drop.
Hey, you know what though?
Terry screwed that up. He was supposed to stand up. That's what it was.
All right. Yeah,
hey, I can blame it on him now. Terry, I love you. I'm telling a story and I'll put myself over.
He also took the ladder spot from you.
I'll apologize about that later, Tom.
Terry Den does another moonsault and pins you.
He landed every single ounce of his weight on top of
you. Yeah, pure like ass, you. Just right on you.
It looked like it crushed you, man.
And I'm happy that, you know, well, I was worried about, because he hadn't done it in the States before, and he said he had done one before in Japan or something, so I'm like, yeah, okay. The first one, he came off and went totally to Stevie's left and missed him, except his foot caught him in the gut.
Yeah. Well, Stevie had to, like, throw his head towards his feet.
Yeah, so I was just happy he hit me.
Yeah.
And when I'm first laying there, I take the can off my head, I'm like... And Terry's climbing up. I'm like, yo, Terry, you cannot possibly hit me.
I was going to say, Hack's laying right next to the ropes. He actually takes the can off and rolls out so Terry can actually hit him. I got to give him credit for
that. It's one thing I think, like, when I was a kid watching, when I saw, like, fat guys do moonsaults, like the Headhunters or Meanie or Vader.
The one Headhunter.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if it was A or B, but one of them only did the moonsault. But when you see a guy that's, like, 53, like Terry Funk, and it was never like his style of wrestling. And when he busted out a moonsault, I mean,
it's not very graceful, but.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
For the win!
It just doesn't matter. It's Terry Funk.
He's emptying the tank.
It's Terry Funk.
I thought you guys had a tremendous match. If I had to give it a star rating, it'd be like 4.25.
It was better than I remember watching it back.
Yeah, like it was really, really good. You guys went like 20 minutes too, and it was awesome. So I don't mean to put you over too much here, Hack, but that match was
great. It was good, Hack. You created a lot of the spots. I'll give you credit for that. You could just see the way the match developed. And
I was calling it all.
I mean, Speed.
I was in control of everything that was going on.
Stevie's pretty much taking every spot. Terry's a wild card, and you're kind of
But if Stevie would have got up and done something else, it would have been fine in the mix because none of it was planned. The intermediary stuff,
right? He's probably young, and he's seeing Terry and you.
Of course, I could see his hesitancy of getting offense in that situation,
which is good. I mean, it worked. Right? It worked perfectly.
All he needed was a couple super kicks, and that's good.
Dude, and he laid you in with a couple nice ones. He laid Terry with a nice one.
Here we go. I'm going to go grab the ladder. I'm going to stick it in the corner. I'm going to spin. Super kick.
Boom.
They were good.
That was a great spot.
And not even 53-year-old Terry Funk put his hand up for a super kick. That's for all you AEW, WWE motherfuckers that want to put your hand up on a goddamn super kick. Push it
right in there.
Seriously.
Yeah. All these guys are precision with that stuff now. You know what I'm saying?
It's a joke.
Stevie, such a great wrestler. Really, really underrated talent. And I thought this match was tremendous. So. Really great work for you guys in that match. And
I had something else to put myself over, okay, but ahead. I forgot.
Try to find it.
He forgot. We're good.
were you super proud of that match afterwards?
No, because yes and no. Because I knew that I killed it.
Okay.
You know, but I wasn't at the point of proud until after you watch it later.
Okay.
And I didn't watch it later for years.
Okay.
And like when you get to the back later and everything, are you like talking to Terry? Are you saying, you know, thank you for the match and everything? Or anything like all that stuff going on afterwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up was then by winning this match, Funk gets the match with Raven. I love how Raven came like right out. He came right out. Jacket takes the belt off and goes to work.
Yeah, because
right
me
away.
And Terry went 15 minutes over because I wasn't going home.
Oh wow.
I mean, they were telling me to go. That's why they sent Todd Gordon out there to tell me to go home. And I'm like, no, I'm not going home until I get done what I want to do.
You know what, though? I don't think that match being so the Raven pins.
They didn't need time in that match.
They didn't.
And Terry knew it also.
Yes.
Terry's right there. The ref's telling him time to go home, too. And he's telling me that. I'm like, no, dude, I'm good.
Terry had
no problem.
The one thing I don't think we made mention of was Tom.
If Terry had a problem, he would have done something.
Yeah. So Tommy's on commentary for the three-way.
Good stuff.
And I love that, you know, Joey does the whole pay-per-view by himself until the main event. And Tommy's on commentary during the three-way. And
You're going to say what I'm going to say, what are you going to
say?
No,
go ahead. You say
it. When he just says, I can't talk to you anymore.
Yes. Yes.
I knew it.
Yes.
So he's like, I just can't talk to you anymore. Shut up, Joey.
That was such a great sell.
Yeah, it was.
Because it's like, I'm in my, like, that's how I am when I'm watching, like, an Eagles playoff game or something, you know? Like, don't talk right now. We're not talking. This is, you know what I mean? He was in his element, and I loved it.
That's crazy.
That was so awesome.
How about Big Dick getting 1.5 inch of air?
Nothing for that. Yo, man. He just kind of flopped his way out to the table.
Choke slam.
Well, it got a huge pop.
What else? The building rattled.
Yeah,
I know, but why didn't Tommy just pick up the trash can and hit him with the trash can over the edge onto the table?
Because I guess Big Dick did choke slams and he wanted to give one back to him as a receipt or something.
Yeah, well, it looked horrible, Tommy.
Yeah, it didn't.
And Dick selling like a turtle on his back on the.
Yeah. The one thing in the match I thought was cool was, you know, Raven's kind of known for a guy that kind of like does a lot of shtick and gets by without doing a whole lot.
Went over the top rope the only time ever in his career ever.
I was like, he's busting out a plancha right now on this? I'm like, okay, this is a main event for the first pay-per-view. Sure.
And yeah, but it took him 15 minutes to set the table up.
Like, horrifying. Like, dude, yeah. Just set it on the apron and set it on the guardrail. Yeah. Like, he's put... Oh, that was
bad. But you got to understand that Stevie always did that stuff for him, and the meanie always did that stuff. Raven
and Nova
wasn't used
and all
to
that. Yeah, like, yo, you guys set up the table. I'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I love how he's punching out the doctor that's working on Funk with the cut, trying to check in, and then the ref.
Well, that's
shtick.
His boy, the doctor.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Raven brought that guy in. He used to hang out and drink with us down at Raven's house at 10th and South Street.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day.
Wow.
Dr. Mark.
Oh, okay.
But he wasn't a gimmick doctor for
this is
that.
A shoot
yeah,
doctor.
He was a straight shoot up doctor.
Okay.
Yeah, we saw him WrestleMania weekend. He came
yeah,
out like.
Yeah, he came over.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny is
like
what's up,
his
Doc?
Best friend ever.
Yeah, what's oh, that's up, cool. Doc? Oh, okay. I did not know that. That's
looking
cool.
Looking just like how he did at Barely Legal.
Yeah,
honestly.
He really did. He really did.
He looked
really
good,
did.
Dude. Yeah.
Well, if I'm a doctor, too. you better believe I'm going to be on the cutting edge of stuff that makes me still look young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Aniston. She looks like. How long ago was she on TV?
Oh, long time
now. She doesn't look that much older.
Not a
now.
Doctor to my knowledge, but she still looks good.
Reggie Bennett from All Japan Women's came out.
That was horrible. The power bomb or whatever
it
was. Dropped her on her leg.
Look, it's just further heat, you know, at this point for the match. And then Raven gets on the house mic. He goes and he's ripping on Dreamer. And then that's when Dreamer gets up. They do the spot with Big Dick Dudley. And then you go home. So it was pretty cool. Dreamer hits the ring after saying he would not get involved finally. And DDT's Raven. Funk covered Raven. And then he kicked out. The ref mess up the time, like the bell. Like what was going on there? Like afterwards. Do you guys talk about that or anything?
I told Ty they should have went home
right
then.
There.
They kick out, the bell rings, and then they go to another finish. If they would have went home without the false finish, the place would have exploded.
Okay.
like that, straight exploded. But after the bell rings, they go back rolling up. Some people, half of them are looking at it. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe what?
Yeah, like it was. It, look, the finish was kind of botched, but look, the crowd went nuts. Funk did the whole celebration in the crowd with Dreamer. It was such an amazing moment. It was the perfect ending for the first ever ECW pay-per-view. Terry Funk, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, if not the greatest. What did it mean for him to main event that pay-per-view for you guys in the locker room? Like, what did everybody think about that?
Well, we needed Terry. We needed anybody on the planet that's a wrestling fan knows Terry Funk.
Yeah.
That's what we needed.
So he stamped you guys.
Yep.
It was that Terry Funk seal of approval. The fans are all hugging Terry Funk. He's right there in the front row with all the guys. It was awesome. So super cool to see. And then seconds later after the pay-per-view ends, the power goes out. I know we mentioned it earlier. Like, that's a legit thing that happened. Could you imagine if the power went out on the pay-per-view?
Right before our finish?
Could you imagine?
It could have killed us.
It could have absolutely killed the company. Like legitimately. Like, 4 years before it actually went out of business. Like, I don't know. That's just amazing.
That blame it on the pay-per-view company, whatever.
What did you guys think of the show overall, rewatching it? Because I absolutely still loved it.
I think everybody came out and carried their weight and, you know, did what they had to do. I mean, if that was any first pay-per-view for any company right there, I think they... And it was a good mix of...
Yeah.
Of everything that ECW provided.
Yeah.
You know, like, you had your Extreme, you had your RVD Land Storm, you had your Tag, like, you had your Aerial, you had... I mean... Well done.
Only thing we didn't have is beating up a woman. And maybe Paulie did that for a reason. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Being your first pay-per-view.
Probably. Yeah.
No, I absolutely loved it. Great, great show. And yeah, that's our Barely Legal review. Here is one of our favorite segments, as always, our listener questions segment. If you guys have a listener question for the show, we've been getting a ton of them.
One more thing before you get to that.
Okay.
If you notice, our whole match, our three-way, was basically a one-camera shoot.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's no this angle, every like 5 seconds, you know? And they hide a lot of stuff with those camera cuts that happened today in AEW and WWF.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard camera work. Like, no, that's it.
It was hard camera the whole match.
Nothing's there protecting you. No editing, nothing like that. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Listener questions. We've been getting a ton in our inbox. So if we haven't got to your question yet, we'll try to get to it next week. We've been really bombarded, and just keep sending them in. We're going to get these on the show.
Hell yeah, that's great.
Sandmanpod@gmail.com. Send in the questions. We will get them out.
Sandmanpod on Twitter, at the Sandman Podcast, Instagram. Send your questions anywhere. We'll get them out here.
Yeah, we'll get them in for you guys. Bob from Broomall wants to know how the wrestling school at Marple Sports Arena came about and how many students of Hack are there?
I thought it was a... I don't remember.
Okay.
I know having it at, you know, me and Damon, because it was really a boxing ring, not a wrestling ring. But I don't remember training any wrestlers there.
Okay. It was, yeah, it was more of like a half and half. It was kind of, I think it was more set up by Damon that it was a, like a boxing training facility. And then it was like, .. like, and Sam and... can wrestle or whatever, but I don't think you ever ended up really training anybody there. It turned really more into a boxing training facility.
Interesting. Okay. Rob Mason from West Philadelphia. What is the best movie starring a professional wrestler, or at least the second best, because the correct answer is They Live, starring Roddy Piper?
No, dude, the other one with the guy that lived in the trailer.
The wrestler, Mickey Rourke?
Was it The Wrestler or Ready to Rumble?
Ready to Rumble.
Yeah. That's the one. You like Ready to Rumble?
It's hilarious. Okay. I didn't like The Wrestler because I hated the end of The Wrestler. I hated the end of him coming off the top rope and then fade to black. Hated that. So that killed the whole movie for me.
Okay.
Yeah, big surprise. He loved it.
All right, so you're going with Ready to Rumble. Okay,
yep.
Interesting.
Crown us.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's great.
This
stuff.
Is not even a.
Whoa.
What was it? Not even a pay per view.
Wasn't it Jimmy the King? Right.
Yeah. Jimmy the King.
And when he's in his trailer, the guy's knocking, and he's like, "Hey, he's got the wig on, acting like he's his mom and stuff." That is just funny stuff.
Okay. Yeah. No one survives a four post massacre.
All right. So you were perfectly fine with David Arquette winning the WCW heavyweight title.
But Sami Zayn or Daniel Bryan.
Right. Yeah,
Bryan. Well, they couldn't hold a candle to Arquette. Yeah. Okay. Yo, it's...
Sal Bandini. No. Want to wrestle?
All right. This one comes from Drummy from Bryan Street Tavern. Would you and the ECW boys ever go out to eat after the shows? Where was your guys' favorite spot? What would you guys get to eat? How much would you typically pay? And how late would you stay till? Yeah, I love the show. Keep on bringing it. No.
All right, dude. What, do you work at some restaurant? And if I give you an answer, you're going to come back with me next week?
Or you stiffed them on a tip.
Dude, we were doing so much coke, there was no eating going after an event.
Well, okay. Any spot like after the arena or anything like that? Nah. Like, nah, it was just... No.
Okay.
The diners there, you know, there was the Oregon Penrose. Diner and the Penrose Diner. Okay. That, you know, that's where you would eat in the morning.
Okay. All right. Well. Kristen from Boise, Idaho writes, what wrestler would you have liked to wrestle that you never had the chance to during your career?
Superstar Billy Graham.
Okay. Yeah, I think we got that one before.
I might have even had a different answer.
Well, it's Superstar
you
today.
You probably did, but well, yeah. Superstar today.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, right.
This is our friend, Uncle Howard. Uncle Howard.
Uncle Howard!
Uncle Howard coming to you live from Hedonism 2 in Rio's Jamaica.
In where?
Rio's Jamaica. Hold on. This is all I got
to I think I've been there.
All right.
Oh, no, I swear to God.
Hack, on the last episode, you referred to me as a pedophile, which isn't true. But it's all jokes, brother. No worries. Rest assured, I got an aluminum bat for anyone who would hurt a child. Believe me on that. Moving on, Hack. You're one of the manliest wrestlers of all time, and all men share a need for speed. What sort of car are you driving now, and what is your dream car?
It's a 20-speed bike. I don't have to go real far. The golf course is right here. Acme's across the street.
Okay. Was there any car that like you ever were like, that's awesome, I wanted?
Nah, I never cared about. I never cared about speed at all.
So well, not necessarily speed, just like a truck, a Hummer.
I'm the same way.
I wasn't a car guy.
I don't care about cars either.
I had vans because I liked them for all of us to get in a van, like me, Todd, Fonzie, Nancy, and maybe somebody else that was there that weekend.
Okay.
And that's how we would travel around. So, like, the same man
would be.
No, there'd be a bed, there's two captain's chairs, a TV.
Are you saying an RV?
No.
There used to be
conversion van.
Okay. Yeah, there used to be a van where there was like a back row of seats that would convert into a bed.
Okay.
Or whatever. Cool. So, good job, Schwinn fucking Armstrong, with your bicycle.
Okay. Next up here, hey guys, Mike from Chicago here. This is a question for everyone on the show. What is your favorite Philly sports moment or memory? Wow, that's a fantastic question. I mean, obviously, I got to go with the Eagles Super Bowl victory over the Patriots.
That's all of us, right?
Yeah, that's all of us. But Phillies,
that's mine.
Not me.
The Phillies World Series over the Rays. I mean, that was such a great moment as well. For me, as a basketball fan, I guess the 2001 Finals Game One, Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue. They end up losing four straight to the Lakers.
Yeah, yada yada yada.
Oh, here everybody we go. He's going to say, "What do you?"
I don't have one.
You don't have a favorite?
I can't.
Why?
Because I can't designate any of them. Even ones that I was there, like in 1980 for the championship. You know, I just can't designate it.
But what about you? Like, I mean, you lived through the Flyers parades and everything too. Like,
yeah.
Were they great? I mean, you don't have a favorite.
I was a kid. I was 13 years old. It was seven. Yeah, I was 12 or 11. I was born in 63, 75, 76, whatever.
Did you go downtown?
I had my first beer. I didn't have to. I lived right on Westchester Pike. There was a parade at Pika's Restaurant right on the pike right there.
Okay. So
I reached into a back of a car with an open window and grabbed a 16-ounce Pabst Blue Ribbon. And
that was your first beer?
Yep.
On the Flyers parade day?
No, that was the night. Oh. That was the night they won, not the parade.
Oh, the night they won. Yeah. Okay. All right. I mean, I don't know about.
Yeah, I mean, the Super Bowl. I actually happened to be at the last like 2.5 innings of the 2008 World Series after the like 2-day rainout.
Oh,
my, my buddy had tickets in like
that Wednesday. It was a Wednesday.
I don't remember. Yeah, it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday or something like that. My buddy's like family friends had tickets and they were living in the Poconos and couldn't stay. So they gave them to him and he invited me and the rest is Jeff Jenkins hits the double, Pedro Feliz hits the single and
I mean, you were there.
Yeah, so just being there was fucking awesome.
I was watching it in either
Brisbane, Australia.
I think it was in Australia at a pub at like 6 a.m.
He called me the day of the parade, which was Halloween. He called me the day. He was like, oh my God, I wish I was going with you so bad. I'm stuck in Australia.
It was so hot that day. It was like 75.
Yeah, it was like 75 on Halloween.
I would rather died that day out in the heat than where I was.
Yeah, well, I was. I think I was in Barnes watching, celebrating. We had a great time. How about you, Oliver? I mean, favorite
Definitely the Eagles Super Bowl, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's 25, so he's kind of young. He wasn't really there for the World Series. But.
Yeah, I was down at Temple watching with a couple of my friends the Super Bowl. Then we all made it down to City Hall after. So
you got to celebrate in the city.
Yeah, we were celebrating in the city, so that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. So, shouts out to Mike. That was a great question. We all love our sports here, so as you know, we'll be enjoying any sports questions you guys throw at us as well. Here we go. Last up, as always, Kevin from Dayton, Ohio writes in.
Kevin.
What's good, Hack? Is it true you and Chris Chetty had a shoot wrestling competition backstage
for $500? Like 8 seconds.
Okay.
In front of the whole locker room. So, I'm like, I'll beat this kid. He ain't no wrestler. So
Chris,
well, next thing I'm on my back looking up the seal.
And is it true that he wouldn't take your money? He gave it back to you?
I don't remember that part. All I remember is looking at ceiling tiles like what? Quick.
Is it safe to say you were consuming a little bit?
Well, I had just gotten there. We had just flown in, so I was, and I never drank on flights because I wanted to smoke a cigarette then. And so, I was probably pretty damn straight then, too.
Well, do you know?
I wish I could blame it on 27 beers and call him out right now because he's getting back into business. Chris Chetty starting to wrestle again.
So you just saw Chris Chetty.
com or. Maybe
you just saw Chris Chetty and were like, nah, I can take him.
We all knew. I didn't know the kid was Kurt Angle's best friend, freaking wrestling wise.
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah, I can do this.
So he did smoke you. This actually happened.
No. Smoke. RVD, there's not a
420,
word.
You just he got just, smoked.
There's not a word that how fast it happened.
It was instant.
Yeah.
You're telling me there ain't nobody jumping me?
We got there ain't somebody nobody jumping that me? Was there and actually saw him. But I just remember, are you kidding me? This kid's doing this to me.
All right. Okay, cool.
So, but it was kind of like a joke thing, too, because everybody except me was in on the joke.
That's hilarious.
Because everybody knew it. I was the only one that didn't.
Okay. All right. Next week on the show, I know you got your Dark Side of the Ring episode coming up. We are going to be breaking it down and talking about it here on the show. So I'm excited to watch it. I know everybody out there is as well. We will be talking about it. This is going to be the only place you can hear directly from Hack talking about his Dark Side of the Ring episode. We got his sons Oliver and Tyler for their direct opinions on it as well. I can't wait to watch it. I can't wait to talk about it. We're going to give it to you real and raw next week. But before we leave.
Well, he actually remembered. All three of us are thinking the same thing.
Well, Tyler had to send that text this afternoon.
I was trying to set him up, too, by like going to like stop the recorder.
It wasn't going to happen.
That's hilarious.
I'm a professional. This is what they do. This is what Mark Henry, this is what I do. Before we leave, Hack, as always.
But in fact, just so you know, please buy a Mark Henry t-shirt.
Yeah, love him.
Just say.
Love him. Before we do, the cane of the week and the toast of the week, Hack. Who do you got for your cane of the week this week?
Oh, the Sixers bench.
The Sixers bench? Not even the refs? You're going the bench?
I'm going with the Sixers bench. Yeah. I can't go. If the bench played better, that end wouldn't even have to happen.
Yeah, they didn't really do a whole lot.
The bench is horrible.
Yeah.
I got to give you credit. I think Embiid and Maxey had 69 points in game two, and the Sixers bench have had 75 points in both one game. Game one and two and combined.
Yeah, so. I thought they averaged 16 and a half points in the first two games, our whole bench.
Yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, that's, so they get that. And you know the cane of the week. Or no, what is it?
Toast of the week.
Oh, the toast of the week. You guys got to know what it is.
I don't. Tell us who the toast of the week is.
It's going to be Swerve, dude.
Oh, Swerve. That's a swerve to us, because I thought you were going a different direction.
Yeah, you gave us a different toast of the week beforehand, somewhere that me and you went on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
You know the toast of the week, it's me swerving.
That's just me forgetting crap.
No, we could toast two people. I don't care if you crack two open. That's fine. We got toast.
Nah, Swerve, you're done. Don't even like you anymore. Let me get to Frankie Edgar.
Okay.
We did this podcast. We went up into Tom's River, New Jersey, me and Ty, and we did the podcast at his house. Wow, what a great looking house. It has the exact same taste as wife that I did. Everything in the house was beautiful. Took us downstairs, treated us like kings, and we had a great time.
Cool. Yeah, it was Frankie Eggers and Roger Matthews. It's the Champ and the Tramp podcast. If you guys haven't had a chance to listen to it right now, they got a great following. They got some good stuff. They treated us well. We just went there and had like a great conversation about, you know, pro wrestling, UFC, life, everything that they're doing, what we're doing, and it should be a good listen. It's coming out soon. So check that out, Champ and the Tramp. And the same
future
podcast.
Hall of Famer Edgar's in their Hall of Fame this year.
He's getting inducted
just
in 2024 Hall of Fame. So shout out to Frankie Edgar. Congratulations on that.
And Roger too from
Jersey Shore. Roger Matthews.
Shouts out to Roger. Shouts out to Frankie Edgar.
He was very fortunate to be married to JWoww when JWoww was wow.
How are you burying a new friend of the show?
Yeah, he wasn't burying. Hey, Roger's a good looking guy.
Okay.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
I'm sure he's doing fine.
Shouts out to Roger. Shouts out to Frank Yeager. Check out their podcast. But check us out. Give us a follow. As always, like, share, review, send us in questions. And we will catch you next week to discuss Dark Side of the Ring.
Peace.
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 All the planes have been